Okay, we're gonna get started. We're just a few minutes late. Welcome everyone. Really pleased to welcome everyone to the Hennepin County Government Center to this hearing. This is actually an actual formal hearing of the Transit Subcommittee of the Transportation Finance Division of the Minnesota State Senate with our special guests from the Transit Subcommittee of the House here as a not in as official a mode. My name is Scott Dibble. I'm a state senator. I'm chair of the Transit Subcommittee. And these are all of my colleagues. just by way of explanation, this is a little early start for folks over at the Capitol. A number of my colleagues are still in committee over at the Capitol and dealing with a variety of other things, so I suspect they'll be trickling in. Now, if they had light rail transit to get over here from there, they might be here a little faster, but I think they're probably going to get bogged down in rush hour traffic as well. And I'll let my colleague introduce himself.
Thank you, Senator Dibble. My name is Frank Hornstein, and I chair the Transportation Policy and Transit Policy and Oversight Committee in the Minnesota House of Representatives. And I'm very, very pleased to be here, very happy with the turnout. And we have some very pressing issues with our transit budget that we want to hear from you about and other transit-related issues. So. Thank you again so much for coming, and we really look forward to hearing from you.
And if you don't get enough of what we do tonight, we're meeting again tomorrow evening on the east side of the metro at Maplewood City Hall, and that's at 6:30. So join us tomorrow night as well for a repeat. Just very quickly, I wanted to call folks' attention to the handouts, with apologies to our visually impaired folks. Don't have Braille version of this. It's kind of pie chart, so I'll try to describe it in as much detail as I can, just to give folks a very high level overview of what we're looking at when we're talking about the metropolitan area transit budget. The first one, chart to look at is the pie chart that says the 2010 and 11 transit budget by source, and you can just see on there the sources of resources of money that come in to support the transit operating capital dollars in the metropolitan area. MVST, that stands for motor vehicle sales tax. Very simply, that's the sales tax we pay when we buy a car. And so we kind of have a joke, buy a car, ride the bus, because we rely very heavily on the motor vehicle sales tax for transit operating dollars in the metropolitan area. And it says $295 million, and that's crossed out, and then it says $255 million. And that shows the kind of decline that we're experiencing from the forecasted revenues. I kind of cross-hatched the white part of that segment of the pie to show visually what that represents in shortfall in the bus and the rail operating dollars of what was $43 million, now an additional $18 million for a total shortfall of north of $60 million. State, when the piece that says state, $158 million, that's state general fund contribution. Fares, we collect fares, which you're familiar with, of course, when you get on the train or the bus, of $230 million. And I'll just note parenthetically, we recapture, if you will, a larger proportion of our transit operating is paid for by fares than most other metropolitan areas around the country. Other, that's advertising, the kinds of things you see on the sides of buses and trains. Federal dollars come in to help with that. CTIB, that stands for County Transportation Improvement Board, and that's the quarter cent sales tax that we levy. Now, that's mostly set aside and dedicated and is governed by the group of counties that have enacted that tax, that quarter cent sales tax, five of the seven metropolitan counties, and those dollars are for the operating and the capital of building the transitways that we have planned that are going in currently and in the future. Contribution for the North Star Corridor, big contribution for the Central Corridor, and then all the other transitway plans. We'll hear a little bit more from Commissioner McLaughlin, who chairs that. This $28 million that you see, though, was a one-time dedication when the transportation bill was passed last year to recognize the shortfall that we experienced in the current biennium that we're in. We had budgeted, anticipating certain expenditures and revenues that turned out to be a shortfall, and we've had to deal with that question twice in this very biennium. Quickly turning to the expenditures, the 2010 through 11 transportation expenditures, a total of $819 million. And then you can see the proportions that go for the transit operating. 526 of that, the core of our service for a regular scheduled route bus service. Hiawatha at $53 million. North Star, which is going to be new service coming on very soon, at $34 million. Metro Mobility, see a number of folks here. I know we're going to speak about that. The suburban transit providers, $76 million, and other kinds of transportation services at $50 million. I just also wanted to point out very quickly, there's a line chart that said forecasted Met Council motor vehicle sales tax revenues, and this just shows exactly what's going on in that car sales and what's happening there. As you recall, a couple of years ago, we passed a constitutional amendment that takes all of the motor vehicle sales tax and dedicates it 100% to transportation purposes, 40% for transit, 60% for roads and bridges, and then a good portion of that transit, of course, is coming to the metropolitan area. And despite the fact that that's going to be phased in over 5 years, moving from a 21.5% to the full 100%. So even though as we're moving towards that full 40% for transit, the collapse has been so profound that we're taking in less actual real dollars, even though we're taking in a higher percentage of the motor vehicle sales tax. So it just shows, I've written in pen there, the February 06 forecast, that was, there was a forecast for, what we might anticipate, 4 years out in 2010. It was north of $200 million. Then, of course, things started not going so well. Soon thereafter, 2 years later, the forecast on February 08 for 3 and 4 years out, you see that comes down to less than $200 million. November of last year, even less, and 09 is even less. But if you look at the solid line, you can see nothing's actually going uphill. It's all going down, even though the percentage itself is going up. So that gives you some idea of the order of magnitude of the challenge that we face. We didn't get here by accident, and we're not going to dig out of this easily or soon. We're going to have to think of some creative solutions to address this problem. Maybe making some of our capital dollars flexible for operating. Even in this biennium, as I mentioned before, we've had shortfalls that were unanticipated, and they've had to deal with the $11 million just through administrative cuts and route efficiencies, pulling on reserves and the like. I don't think we're going to have any more of that unallotment activity that's going to go on in this biennium. But the next biennium, like I said, we anticipated $45 million shortfall. That was pulled back somewhat as fuel prices fell. But then the motor vehicle sales tax collapsed to such a degree that once again has ballooned up to about $62.5 million that we're falling short in the next biennium. No general fund cut has been proposed, but it's just a shortfall in that resource, the motor vehicle sales tax. With that, that's my 2-minute overview of our budget situation. Did you want to add anything?
No. We're probably going to get around to this later, but I know there's a number of advocacy groups that have really helped with this turnout, Transit for Local Communities, and I say a number of other advocate groups, which hopefully you will identify yourself if you're from one of the grassroots organizations, because you make the difference. It's your work that helped us get the transportation override last year and money for transit. So I really do appreciate all the grassroots organizing that went into tonight and continues to go on. So please let us know if you're from a group. Thanks again, and let's get our testimony started.
So first up, we're going to hear from Hennepin County Commissioner Peter McLaughlin. We're in his home, so he gets to give us the welcome. He's also the chair of the County Transportation Improvement Board.
Mr. Chairman and Representative Hornstein, I thank you for being here. I just want to tell the assembled transit advocates what incredible leaders and visionaries these two men have been. They have been there every step of the way, fighting for improved transit in the metropolitan area. So we owe them a real debt of gratitude. So. And I thank all the advocates who are here too. That we've kind of crossed the hump here in terms of advocacy for transit. That transit had been, we've been lacking in grassroots advocacy strength over a number of years. I first served on the Transportation Committee in 1985 in the House of Representatives, and it is a radically different situation now, where people from the grassroots are coming forward each and every day, as you are today, to advocate for investment in transit and a creation of a 21st century transit system that's actually going to work for everybody. We're here with a $62 million operating deficit, largely the result of the collapse of the motor vehicle sales tax on which the transit system depends. And I think one of the things, the first thing we're going to need to guard against here is any kind of proposal to cut the state appropriation. The state appropriation is $158 million on this pie chart, and we need to make sure that we fight against any reduction in the state appropriation to Metro Transit, because that would make the deficit even worse. And I would argue transit's already made its contribution to the cuts and to balancing the budget because its revenue stream, the MBEST, has collapsed. So I think that's the first thing that we need to be vigilant about as we go forward, is that no cuts in the state appropriations. In terms of balancing this budget, it can happen. And it's essential that it happen in order to maintain the integrity of the transit system that we're building and operating. It seems to me that a combination of the stimulus package, and there are ways to use that to move money around that might otherwise have gone into capital, and you can move some things around, and I know the Met Council is looking at that in order to deal with some of the operating deficit. There are reserve funds at the Met Council and Metro Transit that ought to be tapped. It's a rainy day fund. If it's not raining this week, it's never going to be raining. We have a problem. It's pouring out there, and so we need to make sure that we take advantage of the rainy day funds that are available. And I personally believe that there ought to be a temporary use of the property tax that's now being used for transit capital in the transit taxing district. In order to preserve the integrity of the transit system, I think a temporary statutory change to allow use of some of those property tax dollars that are now devoted to capital, that using some of those to solve this temporary shortfall in the operating budget of Metro Transit would be appropriate. Car sales are going to come back at some point. They're going to come back at some point, and I think that we need to make sure that we don't allow the system, the integrity of the transit system, to be destroyed because of this short-term crisis that we have. As the chair of the county's Transit Improvement Board, I should say, I do not believe that the sales tax money ought to be used to deal with the operating deficit. The promise that was made was that these funds were going to be used for long-term improvement in the transit system. When the five counties boards stepped forward and imposed the sales tax, that was the promise that was made to the people, and I think we need to make sure that that promise is kept. I will tell you that yesterday we had a groundbreaking for the Fridley Station on the North Star Corridor. I mean, you're here today, you're two stops from the end of the Hiawatha Line. In November, you're going to be three stops from the end of the Hiawatha Line, because the North Star is going to open in November, and there'll be a stop at Fridley because the sales tax was put in place. That's under construction today to restore that Fridley Station, so that we've actually got that great station, and that city will have service on the North Star. We've made a $300 million commitment to the Central Corridor. If we're going to continue to make investments in additional corridors, in Southwest Corridor, in Botno Corridor, in the Rush Line, in Red Rock, if we're going to build this transit system out, we need to preserve the ability of the county's Transit Improvement Board sales tax monies to be used for that purpose. It is not as though we're not supporting operating costs, and I think it's important to point that out. Half of the operating costs of Hiawatha are being paid with the sales tax. Half of the operating costs of the startup for North Star are being paid by the sales tax. And so it's a myth to say that the sales tax is not being used for some operating costs, but we need to make sure that the line, that there's a hard line that we don't cross, and get into the habit of using these sales tax monies that were supposed to be for improvements in the transit system, that they don't just get folded into the operating budget of the transit system. We need to make sure that we're continuing to invest in the future. This is a moment for long-term investment. This is an incredible moment. The U.S. House of Representatives in the appropriations bill for 2009 included funding, the last installment of funding for North Star. $20 million for Central Corridor, so that's going to now moving down the track in terms of getting significant federal money. It included money for the first time for Southwest Corridor, LRT line, and so we're moving. But if we destroy the ability of the County's Transit Improvement Board sales tax to make the complementary investments in these transit improvements, we're gonna fall behind for another generation. It took us a while to get our act together in this metropolitan area. We had a lot of opposition, but with Hiawatha and North Star and now Central, we're moving forward, and we need to keep that momentum. This is a moment to keep that momentum up, and we can't destroy the integrity of the transit system as we move forward. So the final couple points I'd make, Mr. Chairman, are one, because the county's Transit Improvement Board sales tax is in place, the state's contribution to the capital costs of these lines has been reduced from what was anticipated to be 33% for Central Corridor before the sales tax down to only 10% of the cost. So we are providing, again, relief to the state budget long-term by having a sales tax for transit purposes in the five-county metropolitan area. So we need, that's again why we need to maintain the integrity of that county's Transit Improvement Board funding. Finally, it's not time to raise fares. It is not time to raise fares. There's just been a fare increase of 25 cents. A 25 cent fare increase raises only $7 million. That's a lot of money, but it's not much in comparison to this this deficit that we have. This is a moment when we need to have a transit system that's going to help people get to work. It's hard enough for people to get to their jobs or to find jobs. And if we start to compromise the bus system, or we start to make it too expensive for people to work, get to work, we're destroying a public service. That's what this is about. Transit's a public service. And we need to make sure that we have a high-quality public service. That's what we've been aspiring to, and we need to make sure that we continue to do that. And I think, I believe a fare increase at this point would be going in absolutely the wrong direction. It's a time of high need, and it's a time when we've been building ridership, and we know that fare increases will reduce ridership. So the job here is going to be to get organized, though. You've done great organizing, but we need to be vigilant throughout this legislative session. We need to be at every hearing. We need to make the case for solving this operating deficit that Metro Transit has, and then continuing the investment long-term in transit in this metropolitan area. So I thank you all for being here today, but your job's not done. You're going to have to get out here between now and May 18th when the legislature must be finished, and we need to make sure that we raise our voices for transit each and every week to make sure that that system is preserved and expanded over time. Mr. Chairman, thank you very much. Appreciate the chance to be here.
Thank you, Commissioner. We have with us also the chair of the Metropolitan Council, Peter Bell, who would like to just say welcome. As is the case with ourselves. Oh, and before you go up, Chairman Bell, we have Senator Jim Carlson from Eagan. Would you like to introduce yourself, Senator Carlson?
Sure. Hi, I'm Senator Jim Carlson, and I represent Eagan and a little bit of Burnsville, and I'm the vice chair of the Transportation Committee, and I'm pleased to see so many people here, and I want to hear what you have to say. So thank you very much for welcoming me.
And Chairman Bell is not here to provide a lot of answers. He's here to listen, as are we. We don't have the answers yet. We're working very hard, but we need to understand the importance of these issues to you and your lives, and frankly hear all of your creativity and your ideas. But I don't, Peter, Chairman Bell wanted to bring some words of welcome.
Senator Dibble, I appreciate the opportunity to address this gathering. Representative Hornstein, both of you actually represent me. It's good to be your constituents. Senator Carlson, good to see you as well. I wanted to share with everyone my concern as well about the deficit that Metro Transit now faces, $62.5 million given the revenue forecast that came in yesterday for fiscal year 10 and 11. And a deficit that is equally disturbing of $55.3 million for fiscal year 12 and 13. Each of these, of course, are going to need our full and undivided attention. A major, I guess, message that I'd like to share with everyone is that I have always seen and continue to see the bus system as the backbone of our transit system. And I think that while I as many of you are strong supporters of transit, both BRT and LRT, the bus system really is the workhorse of our system, and I think it is incumbent on all of us to figure out a way to keep it strong and vibrant. As most folks are aware, we're at about a 25-year high in transit ridership at about 82 million rides that we provided last year, and I think it is important to keep that momentum going. Senator Dibble, I will simply end by saying that we at the Met Council are working very hard to address this deficit. I would characterize the strategies we are going to use in three separate buckets, and then I would very much welcome the comments from those that are gathered here today. The first bucket that we will use to address the $62.5 million deficit is some internal administrative actions we can take. The use of reserves and the like. We are fortunate to have ample reserves at the council, and it is my intention to deploy those reserves in part to deal with this deficit. We have had to, as you are aware, Senator Dibble, do that for the fiscal 08 deficit, or excuse me, 09 deficit that we're facing. We're going to have to deploy those for fiscal year 10 and 11. The second bucket will be approaching you and your colleagues at the legislature, perhaps, to allow us to use our levies that we have, the Met Council levies, over $70 million on an annual basis, but reallocate those levies on a temporary basis to deal with the transit deficit. And the third strategy that we will be using is part of the $67 million stimulus package or stimulus dollars that will be coming from the recently passed stimulus legislation. We will be able to use some, though not all, of that $67 million to address this deficit. We have not taken fare increases or route reductions off the table, but it is important to understand that that is a low priority of mine, and it is my hope, though I can't say a firm commitment at this point, not to raise increases. As Commissioner McLaughlin said, we just raised fares 25 cents in October. That does yield approximately $7 million, but it is injurious to our effort to grow our ridership. So hopefully we'll be able to address this without resorting to that. So broadly speaking, Senator Dibble, those are the three areas we hope to address this. We hope to firm up those plans in the next 2 to 3 weeks. And then you and your colleagues, of course, will have an opportunity to comment and take action on it. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Chairman.
Thank you, Chair. Thank you, Chair Bell, for your ongoing partnership with us. And I did also want to recognize there is a Met Council member here, Yvette Witzak is
Lynette.
I'm sorry. Lynette is here and represents the northern part of Minneapolis and I think some inner suburbs in the northern area. So thank you for coming, Ms. Witzak. Josh. Okay. And, so our first testifier from the public is Josh Lang from the St. Stephen's Human Rights Program. And others from his program.
And they have a little multimedia presentation for us, so we might need to get out.
We might need a little bit of AV help just for a second here. I lost the pop-up on him. Whoever's on that.
While we're figuring that out, I also wanted to thank Katie Hatt and Commissioner McLaughlin's office, who worked with the advocacy groups to secure this facility and did a lot of legwork to help us out in being here tonight. So thanks, Katie.
is Richard Johnson. My name is Richard Johnson. I work with Josh Lang in the Human Rights Program at St. Stephen's. At the St. Stephen Human Rights Program, we started working on the bus increases, talking about them about part of July. We went to social service agencies such as Salvation Army, Mary's Place, Access Works, People Serving People, and we asked three questions to people, bus riders. We got 409 testimonies, and we asked them three questions. We asked them what their name was. These are the people on the streets now. What do you use the bus for, and how will the 75-cent increase, and then, of course, the 50-cent increase affect you? We started in July, and this is our video. If we can pop it up, this is what we found.
It's not coming up, huh?
We need the audio.
While we're trying to get this set up, we're going to have two people testify. Terry Gowdy is going to come up first to testify. He was with us in these testimonies.
How you doing? My name is Terry Gowdy. I'm the co-founder of Homeless Against Homelessness and also active member of the human rights organization from St. Stephen's Church, disabled veteran also. I'm the common man. I don't have big numbers to crunch, but I have had experience with homeless people trying to get back up on their feet. One of the most important things was transportation. Now, if we increase the bus rates, see, it's going to affect so many people homeless, the metro mobility situation for handicapped people, the ride, and so on and so forth. We can't afford this. We're in a big recession right now. No one has any extra money to promote extra bus fare or anything like that. The nonprofit organizations are trying their best to hold on and hang in there and help people who are homeless. We also need to take a good look at possibly discounting rates for nonprofit organizations so that these people can get back on their feet. This is something we can't just say, oh, well, we had a default in our budget and so on and so forth. I mean, we're here in America. We're supposed to have a good backup plan for this instead of letting it fall on the taxpayers' shoulders. I mean, this is not something that's new. This is fundamental. And I want to thank you for the time, and I appreciate it.
Video. This is what we found out. We had 409 video testimonies from people off the streets. People are homeless, living on the cusp. This is the video on this. There's 409 videos, so look at them on YouTube. Here's this. Here's our montage.
I'm sorry, our video testimony thing didn't come up on the computer. And we are working right now at St. Stephen's through Dibble's office on a Senate file 732 and a House file 809. It's called the Self-Sufficiency Discount Passes and Bus Token Bill. It would allow nonprofits to purchase bus passes and bus tokens at half price for the homeless community and the job seeker people. I think it's a really good thing, and we have a lot of people. That video was a montage of all the people that we've not, you know, it's about a 6-minute video, but it's a really, really powerful video. We have Mary Jo Copeland and a lot of people who are backing us up on this self-sufficiency bill. So I would love for you guys to look at Senate File 732 and House File 809. Senator Dibble is the author, and Hornstein was a co-author, too, so they're in our corner for us, and you know, the people on the streets, they don't have the access You know, we fall into so many different categories, whether it be, you know, addiction or mental care, but there's like a mash of everything. So you don't fall sometimes into specific categories that you can get through social services other than the fact that you're homeless. And there's a lot of stuff that goes along with being homeless. I being a homeless guy at one time, there's a lot of things that come along there. So what we're trying to do is help our brothers and sisters to rise up and be able to take care of themselves, to be able to go and see their parents, to be able to make it to healthcare stuff, to stay on methadone, to get through their AA meetings so that, you know, someday hopefully they will have a job and be a bigger part of the community. So it is Senate File 732 and House File 809, the self-sufficiency discount, bus passes, and bus tokens. I think this is our video here, huh? Let's listen to this. Let's watch this. This is a beautiful, beautiful, beautiful video.
Income right now, $200 a month. Mary Jo Copeland, and I'm the founder and director of Sharing Caring Hands at Mary's Place. I don't agree with that bus fare increase because it's going to hurt a lot of people. But you know what? It's me that sits and gives out tokens all day long. And we don't need to make it harder on an organization like this that helps hundreds of thousands of people with bus tokens. That's how they get to work. That's how they get to their jobs. And it just costs more and more money. I don't want to turn them down. But why do you do that? You shouldn't increase that because God wouldn't want you to do that.
So thank you, and please support Senate File 732 and House File 809. The self-sufficiency discount passes. Thank you very much, and right on.
Rich, quickly. There were some facts that were printed up on the screen at the very end, and some people couldn't see those visually impaired folks. So can you repeat what those were? Adding what the fare means for a monthly budget and the Wilder Foundation study.
At the it's $80 right now. If it goes up 50 cents, it's 110. If a person is making only $1,100 a month, that's a lot of money. Now, if you're you're making $10-$12, you can't get these social services stuff. But if you have four kids, that's a big chunk out of your thing, and trying to make right at $1,000.
Right.
What the Wilder report says is in 2006, the biggest barrier to people getting off of the streets and getting into employment was transportation. So those buses are a lifeline for us. Children, and this is a big thing for me because it hurts me when I think about this. Kids that don't have a home, they get bus tokens so they can ride the bus so they don't get abused out there. So not only is the buses a way of getting from point A to point B, but it is a shelter and it's a way of keeping people protected. So we have to really look at those things too as well. And that's why this self-sufficiency bus pass thing is so important and so vital for our community. Because we were talking about the basic survival. And I know when I took the bus, I talked to this one girl, the first one. She looked like she had been on the street since she was 16. I know, because I'm from East LA, right? And I seen her, and her heart just snapped in front of me when I said that 75 cent increase. I was like, oh, here's another big, big thing that I have to deal with. And so I remember her story and her video testimony, and knowing that she's been on the streets since she was 16, now she's 20, trying to get it together. And it's going to really affect people. So, all right, thank you very, very much.
Thank you. Next up we have Mayor R.T. Ryback, who's with us tonight. Welcome, Mayor.
Thank you very much. It's wonderful to be here. I'm happy and very proud that my senators, Dibble, and my representative, Hornstein, are not only having this here, but have been incredible leaders for the state on transit. And I want to thank you so much for being here. And I also want to thank the other representatives. I especially want people to understand, those of you from Minneapolis, that Senator Carlson does not represent Minneapolis. Senator Carlson represents a metropolitan area that is interdependent on transportation and transit. And when we have needed allies to partner, he's been a phenomenal asset. So by the end of this year, when you walk down to Marquette or Second and take high-speed bus rapid transit buses to your job in Dakota County, know it's people like that who've helped us make this work. So thank you very much for that. Thank you. We are at a very difficult moment here. We are trying to wrestle with some extraordinarily difficult financial challenges in the state. They have obviously had huge implications on our bus system. What are we going to do about that? Well, to understand the situation today and how to get out of it, we need to understand the situation 8 months ago and also 8 months from now. 8 months ago, what was the situation? 8 months ago, the topic was not the jobs and the economy. The topic was gas prices. And 8 months ago, the issue was all about the idea that how, in a period of time where gas prices are going up, do we do everything humanly possible to get more people riding the buses and to make sure that those people are on the bus can stay on the bus. So 8 months ago, the issue of gas prices was all about the idea that more and more people, in fact, in extraordinary numbers, were getting onto the buses. That was 8 months ago. 8 months from now, what will be the situation? Unfortunately, I think everything that we know knows that we're going to 8 months from now still be talking about the economic crisis we're talking about now, still be talking about jobs, talking even more, unfortunately, about people who have lost their job and are trying to get new employment and move around. But unfortunately, I believe we'll also be talking about what we were doing 8 months ago, which is gas prices. We are at a temporary low in gas prices. I don't think anybody thinks that the gas prices are going to stay this way forever. So stop and think what that little moment in history just mentioned. What we may have in almost a year is the worst of both worlds. High gas prices, high unemployment, and those two things together argue extraordinarily strongly that this is the wrong time to be raising fares on buses. And in fact, what we should be doing is trying to figure out a way to make sure that as this economic crisis worsens, we need to do everything possible to have all the folks in this room, especially those who talk about people deeply dependent on the transit system, have access, but also those who aren't in this room, people who haven't traditionally been allies for transit, but who are going to be as their circumstances change and as the world changes. So what we have to do is stop and think about what we do temporarily that gets us to a permanent fix. We have lurched from one crisis to the other on transit funding. Chair Bell does a very good job. His mandate is to take the dollars that are given to him and make tough choices out of the dollars that are given to him. That's his job and he does it well. Our job is not to limit the options to that. Our job instead is to say that transit should not be competing with transit. Our job is to say that we have to stand up and make some tough decisions that look at permanent funding strategies that allow us to put long-term funds in place that don't require us to constantly come back and raise fares that will drive people away from the very system we need to make. One of the worst choices we could make would be to say that new dollars coming into the system that are specifically intended to expand our transit options are instead used to simply maintain the existing system. That is the wrong choice to make. Now, the world is filled with people right now who are saying, don't cut my program, don't cut my program. I unfortunately live with that reality, as you do at the legislature and as everyone does. You can't simply stand up and say, don't cut my program, without talking about an alternative. I don't stand here with an option in front of you, but I stand here in saying that I am more than willing to stand up for additional revenue coming into this system that will permanently solve this issue. And that means to all of you that you should not take the mantra that too often has come out of the governor's office, which is simply saying, we can't do anything more, we simply have to pull in our reins. Now is the time, in fact, to come up with a new strategic way to come up with new funding strategies. Commissioner McLaughlin, who has been such a phenomenal leader on this, talked about a couple of those before. I will stand up and stand up for that. You are looking at a politician who will stand up for additional fees to come into this system. Lightning will not strike us dead. In fact, history will judge us wrongly if we don't use this moment of time to look for new financial streams to come into this system. But in the interim, the worst thing we could do would be to drive people away from a system we need. When the bus system went on strike, but 5 years ago, they all sort of run together. I think it was about five years ago. There were some testimonies, unfortunately, it was a bit like this about what was happening. And a man came up, he was among gentlemen who had come into this country a few years ago and stood up and so proudly said that he had never once, since he got his job in this new country of America, ever missed a day of work until that strike occurred. And that did everything to say to that man who had tried so hard to say that this community had let him down. Because all he asked, this hardworking person who showed up every day, was to simply have access to that job that everyone else had. Someone who could afford a job had better access than he had because for this one time the bus failed. What happens to him and everybody else if this fare increase and the one before and the one coming after it drive more and more people away from the one thing that gives them equal access to employment. We always should care about that. We especially should care about that now. So I want to finish by saying I don't stand up here as somebody simply saying don't cut what I care about and figure it out from somewhere else. I stand up here instead saying this is the wrong place to cut, and I will stand up with you if you make a gutsy decision that isn't just about the short term, but says we need to step up, make a tough decision, come up with new funding that underlies this long term so we don't have to make choices between things we shouldn't pick from. Thanks for your good work.
Thank you, Mayor. So our goal is to try to be out of here, let people move on with their lives sometime not too long, we hope, after 7. We have about 40-ish or so people signed up to testify, so we were thinking about 2 minutes per person, get us out of here in you know, between an hour and 15 minutes, an hour and a half. So with that agreement, and everyone could kind of respect that timing so that everyone can be heard, and we can be out of here at a fairly decent hour, get some good testimony from folks. 2 minutes is actually a good amount of time if you use it well. So with that, we'll start calling on folks who have signed up ahead of time first, and then we'll move to the sheet of folks who signed up as they arrive this evening. And we'll try to call, you know, 3 or 4 down the list so folks know to be getting ready. So the first 4 folks will be Celeste Riley, Jerry Kalert, Susan Stellmacher, and Jennifer Munt.
Hi, I'm Celeste Riley. I live in Mendota Heights. For about 5 years, I've been involved in a grassroots effort to bring light rail to Northern Dakota County. I have many decades in which I rode the bus as a high school student, a college student, as a worker after college. I got away from the bus for a little while. I've try to take it now once in a while from my home in Mendota Heights to my job in Northeast Minneapolis. It more than quadruples my commute, but it's also it only runs once in a while, and I try to take it in the snow whenever I can. And the last 2 times I've tried to take it, it never showed up because it was stuck in the snow, which is why I work for advocate for trains. They don't get stuck in snow, but. I have 2 points. One is that it already strikes me that transit is very expensive. Buses are expensive. I come from a 2-income family, and when I look at paying that bus fare twice a day, 5 days a week, it comes out way cheaper for me to drive. So I want to make the point that nobody's getting a real deal with what's being charged already for transit. And so I don't think a fare increase is at all justified. The second point I want to make is that I think our economy, the problems we're having with our economy, demand that we do just the opposite, that we reinforce and create better accessibility to transit. If you take people whose circumstances have declined due to the economy, I think that taking away or limiting access to transit could take that from difficulty to disaster. And so I'm here to ask you to make sure that transit is not only not suffer because of the economy, but is actually improved. So thank you.
Thank you. Thank you very much. So before we start, I'll just mention to folks standing up over here, lots of, or a few little smattering of seats over here, so don't be shy, come on over and sit down up here as well. Join us if you want to take a load off. This is Jerry Kalert, Susan Stellmacher, Jennifer Munt, then just to let folks know, Sandy Alstrom, Lori Bona will be coming up soon too. Thank you.
Good afternoon. My name is Jerry Kalert. I'm a member of ISAIAH and the Sierra Club. I live in Immer Grove Heights, and I'm not a frequent transit rider. The service isn't that good. The one exception that I know of is light rail, and that's how I got here tonight. But I need my car to get out of Immer Grove Heights, where I'd say public transit service is really bad. We live just about 10 miles from the state capital. If my wife drops me off there on her way to work and I take the bus home, it's a 2-hour trip, 5 miles per hour. Why? Infrequent service, 2 transfer points with long, cold waits, and then I walk the last mile. That's as close as the bus gets to us. Maybe if I walked faster, I could get it down to an hour and 50 minutes. But I'm not asking the legislature to fully fund Metro Transit for us. I'm asking it for the working men and women who rely on it to get to their jobs, for the infirm and elderly so they can keep their medical appointments and stay mobile, for the students who bus to their classes, for a growing number of retired couples who'd like to get rid of one, if not both, of their cars, and for all who breathe the air in the Twin Cities, because this is an historic opportunity. We need to cut the carbon emissions and global warming that threaten our way of life. We need to clean up our polluted air. We need to unclog our highways. We need to cut our foreign oil imports. All these needs can be met by investing in public transit. Legislators, show us your vision. Show us your courage. Fully fund public transit in the metro area. Thank you.
Thank you. We created some little visual cues for folks. Michael, my assistant here, will hold up your 30-second and your time sign. So, welcome.
Hi, thank you, Chairman Bigel, and thank you, distinguished subcommittee members that are here tonight. My name is Susan Stallmacher, and I'm a person living independently with multiple sclerosis. I live in North Minneapolis at Kingsley Commons, which is the first 100% accessible, affordable housing exclusive to people that live with multiple sclerosis. And also, I just want to add that for those of you who are not familiar with MS, multiple sclerosis, it is a chronic, often disabling disease of the central nervous system for which there is no cure at this time. I became a regular rider on Metro Mobility in December of 2006 due to worsening MS. As my inability to walk community distances progressed, it became necessary for me to give up driving and use a scooter. So I am truly grateful that I have transportation through Metro Mobility. I'm an active volunteer with the National MS Society Minnesota chapter. I use Metro for all my transportation, doctor appointments, grocery shopping, and lately I've furthered my volunteering by becoming an activist and attending a lot of health and human services meetings at the Capitol since everything reconvened back on the 6th of January. And also, I think it's important for you people to know that I'm not the only Kingsley Common resident that relies on Metro Mobility. Virtually everyone that lives at Kingsley Commons relies on Metro Mobility for their transportation, so they also share an interest to preserve this wonderful shared transportation system. And I just also want to mention to you that before Metro Mobility, my only alternative transportation was an unaffordable, expensive taxi service. And in 2 months, because of frequent doctor appointments and visits, I wiped out the $700 that I had in my savings account. So I just want to finish. Bottom line, if we didn't have Metro Mobility, those of us that rely on it, we'd all be living as shut-ins. So I thank you so very much for listening to my testimony, and please preserve Metro Mobility for all the people like me so that we can continue leading active, independent lives. Thank you.
Thank you. And earlier, Susan gave us these handouts to give us a little more information about MS, and so these are at your places, members. So thank you. Jennifer Munt. Welcome.
Chairman Dibble and Hornstein, thank you and committee members for bringing your committee to the people. I'm Jennifer Munt, and I'm the chair of Transit for Livable Communities. For those of you who don't know us, we are a nonprofit, nonpartisan advocacy organization for 9,000 transit users throughout the metro area. I come to you tonight to ask you to do everything within your power to maintain Metro Transit's fares and services. There is no worse time than an economic crisis to cut the bus system. Right now, transit is the way that families stretch their transportation dollars. They need to know that there is a consistent fare and consistent service. I'm also here to say that our goal is to double the transit system by 2020. Every time the legislature helps us take a leap forward, fare increases and service cuts make us take two steps back. That is not how you build a transit system. It's not how you remove cars from traffic. It's not how you clean our air. I also would like to say that in a past life, I spent 7 years at the Metro Council, where I worked with the transportation planners there. It is extremely difficult to go to your customers and say, I have a great opportunity for you to pay more and get less. Please don't make Metro Transit do that again. Thank you.
Sandy Alstrom, Lori Bona, George Roser, and Karen Roser.
Good evening, honored leaders of this hearing. I'm very happy to be here. My name is Sandy Alstrom, and I live with my husband Tom in Shorewood. We're kind of nestled in next to Excelsior, and we lived our whole lives in Minnesota. And in 68 years of living here, we've only seen the transportation choices go downhill. And we don't have much service right now out where we are. I think there's one bus in the morning early and then one in the evening coming back. And we need improved routes all over the city, but the suburbs need to be connected too, because that would encourage more folks to choose transit and take congestion off the roads. And I'm just heartened by all the people who have spoken before me, wondering if I should even get up here. But I guess with my history and where I see things going now, working with Transit for Livable Communities and Sierra Club, I only see us gathering more and more folks saying we need to move forward from emphasis on roads, which in the last few years we've seen a lot of lanes put in and the 394 and so forth to bring cars in. But we need to, I think, look at transit as community, where when I get on the bus to come down to orchestra concert or something, I'm riding with people cross-generational, cultures beyond my imagination. And our community is only going to get more that way. And how are we going to understand the needs and enjoy the diversity of our community if we're stuck in all these individual cars? And someone mentioned the pollution and energy costs. I mean, it's out there. But mostly to me, it's the rich community we have, and we need to make it grow and go forward. So I, too, encourage Senator Dibble and Representative Hornstein and anyone else that has any power in this to fight the good fight. We hear all the terrible things that are happening, but we need to have courage. Thank you.
Thank you. Lori Bona.
And George,
okay. George and Karen Roser. After them will be Don Zatruck and David Jansen.
Good afternoon. I'm a transit rider. I got here by transit. I do reverse commute. I may be able to afford to ride the bus in the metro system, but I notice that there's a lot of people out there that's their only form of transportation. So I look upon you to say, please provide two things. First of all is everybody needs a place to live. And the second thing is everybody should be able to find a way of getting to their job or to find a job. So those are absolutely the two most basic needs I think we have in this community. Thank you.
Thank you.
Mr. Chair, committee members, Karen Lee Rosar. I live in the North Loop neighborhood of downtown Minneapolis. I'm an avid transit rider, biker, and walker, and those are my main modes of transportation. I wanted to say, first of all, that rather than repeating it, I fully support everything Commissioner Pete McLaughlin spoke of today, and I did submit a diagram to you, and I'm going to just read below that and ended my testimony, so I'm using my time efficiently. Transportation modes, such as walking, biking, and transit, are the least costly, healthiest, greenest, safest, efficient, and energy-independent alternatives. They can be used independently or in complement to each other if policy promotes transit-oriented development and efficient land use. Policy should reflect that roads are prohibitively expensive and promote inefficient land use, maintain our oil dependency, and damage our environment. This is an unsustainable model. There will never be enough funds and time resource available to build our road system out of congestion and gridlock. If we do not address the comprehensive absolute costs of automobile usage, we will continue to make poor policy decisions. Our metro area will diminish in its capacity to move people and goods efficiently. This will put our metro in a spiraling economic decline. Businesses will not be able to operate efficiently and competitively if roads are increasingly congested and in gridlock. Since the metro is the economic engine of the state, we will also see our state in a spiraling economic decline unless we realign our transportation policy. We must dispel the notion that biking and walking are simply recreational. These legitimate transportation modes are accelerating in use, especially in urban centers. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Don Zatrick, David Jansen, then we'll go to Robin Curley and Jennifer Dunham.
David Jansen's not here.
Oh, thank you. Welcome.
Thank you, Senator Dibble, Representative Hornstein, and members of the Transit Subcommittee. My name is Don Zatrock, and I reside in New Brighton. I'm a volunteer with Transit for Liberal Communities. I've lived in the Twin Cities area since 1980 and have been a regular rider of Metro Transit and its variants for a majority of the years that followed. Therefore, I have consistently witnessed numerous cycles of bus service cuts and fare increases for over 28 years. Because our family of four can only afford one car, we need to rely heavily on an inadequate public transit system. I've had to turn down several job opportunities because bus service was non-existent, too infrequent, or too slow. In addition, both our daughter and son attend local colleges and use Metro Transit. However, my daughter needed to transfer schools because of a lack of service, and even now she needs to take three buses to get to campus. My son refuses to wait for 1 hour at the local transit center because the connecting bus leaves 2 minutes before his first bus arrives. As a result, my wife drives him to the transit center before going to her job. I know that the transit operators in Minnesota would like to provide acceptable levels of service to avoid situations like these. That is why I'm asking you, Senator Dibble, and members of this subcommittee, to support an appropriation of at least $45, and I'm hearing now $62 million, over the next biennium to at least maintain our present level of bus service and prevent another fare increase for transit users of Minnesota. I believe that such a port will be beneficial to the commerce for our entire state by allowing these Minnesotans to continue to get to campuses, places of employment, and other necessary destinations. And thank you for your time.
Thank you. So we have Robin Curley and Jennifer Dunham. And after them will be Tom and Maureen Merrilt. Welcome.
Hey, thank you. Sorry, I missed that I was right after him. Thank you, Senator Dibble and Representative Hornstein and Senator Carlson. It's good to see you for convening this hearing. My name's Robin Curley. I have been living what I like to call a car-free lifestyle since 2006, when I sold my car before heading off to Asia for some teaching and adventures. And when I got back to the U.S. last April here, I decided that if I could make it work getting to and from point A to point B and Thailand, India, Nepal, all these different places where I couldn't even read the signs, that I could probably make it work here in Minnesota. I'm not going to lie, this was a bit of a challenge when I first got back. I was living with my parents in Eagan, Senator Carlson's district, and commuting to Robbinsdale by bus and bike. So that took some planning, commitment, some patience. But still, for me, the benefits of biking and using the bus just really outweigh any of that inconvenience. For me, bicycling has all these physical, mental health benefits that I love. But I also know that there's no way that I could be a bike commuter without transit to fill in the gaps. If it's blizzarding, which, you know, it sometimes does here in Minnesota, if it's icy, if I'm too sick to bike, or if I have an injury, or if I'm just feeling a little lazy, I do rely on the bus and the train to get me where I need to go. And I also would like to echo a point that somebody else made, that I love riding the bus because I feel like it's such an important source of community. A relevant vignette is, and not to mix messages here, but a couple weeks ago I was riding the bus with a coworker to the Capitol for a gay marriage rally, and we ran into some girls who were into our signs. They took pictures of us, and they ended up coming with us to the rally for their first time ever at the state capitol. We gave them a little tour. I mean, we never would have had an experience like that if we were boxed up in our cars, separated from each other. So just in closing, I would like to add my voice to the chorus that the Minnesota legislature please find funding to support our mass transit system and keep our cities and our state vital or vibrant. Thanks.
Thank you. So we have Jennifer Dunham making her way, Tom and Marie Merrill after her, and then Elizabeth Walk. Greetings.
Greetings, Chairman Dibble and members of the Transit Subcommittee. My name is Jennifer Dunham, and I am the president of the National Federation of the Blind of Minnesota. We have members all around the state. And just like the transit ridership in general, we, people who are blind, are a cross-section of society. We're students, we're seniors, parents, homemakers. Some of us are unemployed. Some of us are working in all kinds of jobs at all levels. I'm speaking on behalf of thousands of blind people and other people who use mainstream public transportation daily. We're paying full fare, and we use it as the primary means of independently fulfilling the responsibilities of our lives. And those responsibilities, of course, include getting to and from our jobs, getting our groceries, taking our kids where they need to go, participating in the life of our communities, and just all of the things that everybody does to live life as contributing citizens. Obviously, times are hard. Cutting back on the already strapped system of public transit will make them significantly harder for a good portion of the population. First and foremost, it would endanger our jobs. Now, jobs are not easy to come by for anybody right now, but for people who are blind, that's been the case for a long time, and it's particularly true because of the persistent and widespread low expectations about what blind people can do. So we do not need to have another barrier added there. It never fails when cutbacks are threatened. Over the years, we hear from blind people who are going to be affected because the routes that they use to get to their jobs are looking like they're going to go away, and they don't have a way to get there independently. We need, and this economy needs, for us to remain tax-paying citizens. Some of us have lost our jobs, of course, because of the economy, and we need a way to get around and do the things we're doing and looking for jobs so that we're not depending on society to support us in ways that would be far more expensive than running a transit system. It's clear to me that transit is important to a great many people because every bus that I get on has been more crowded in the last year with people of all kinds of income levels and all types of people than I've ever seen it. So we applaud that, and obviously it's better for the traffic, for the environment, and all kinds of things when more people use the buses. So please do not drive ridership down and drive people back to their cars with a fare increase. The citizens of Minnesota need and deserve a full transit system. And we need to find alternate funding to get that accomplished that doesn't involve fare hikes or cutbacks to service for the benefit of everyone. Thank you.
Thank you very much. You have a fan club, I see. So we have Tom and Maureen Merrill, Elizabeth Block, and then Sarah Sebchik.
Hello. My name is Maureen Marolt. Thank you, Senator Dibble and Representative Hornstein and Senator Carlson. for being here. We would just like to say that we are self-advocates and that we use the boss as our primary transportation. If we don't have transportation, we can't get to our jobs, we can't recreate, we can't go to classes, be independent. We need to find a funding source that is that can be worked so that everybody can access it.
Thank you. Yeah, good evening. I'm Tom Rowell. I'm out of St. Louis Park. And I'd just like to say that we just had a little bit of a problem. We just went over to St. Paul to Como Zoo a little bit ago, and we went to catch the bus, and I called the Metro Transit, and they said, well, go to the next stop. They don't stop at every stop. Well, I was told wherever somebody's at the stop that the bus is supposed to stop. Well, we walked over to the other one. By that time, the bus had just passed us by. Well, then now, just recently, I got laid off from work. And I do take the bus. I can catch either the number 9 to downtown and then catch the train. I love the train, by the way. It gets me to work in with 5 minutes. And so, but the thing is that the timing and the excess time that it gets to catch them is kind of difficult. But I would also like to say thank you for all you've been doing, and I'm hoping and praying when our light rail comes to St. Louis Park. Thank you.
All right. So Elizabeth Walk, Sarah Subchick, then Steve Jacobson.
I want to thank you for this opportunity to speak today. My name is Elizabeth Walk, and I'm a resident of Uptown. I moved there in the middle of 2006, so relatively new resident. I come from Frankfurt, Germany. I was in the chemical industry for many years and have traveled the world around a couple times. This has exposed me to a number of mass transit systems. When I moved here, I was a bit disappointed by the mass transit here, but I see a lot of potential. I moved to the Uptown area, again, to access probably your best network of mass transit in this area. My preferred method of transport is my bike. I don't have a car, but unfortunately Minnesota has this thing called winter. Can't do much about that, so the buses and trains get me everywhere I need to go, to the airport, downtown, to the doctors, to wherever I need to go. The state capital, though, is a bit iffy. Takes a bit more than an hour. We need to talk about that. I know the light rail is coming. We don't have enough time to espouse all of the benefits of mass transit. But in my travels, I've noticed that communities that have a good mass transit system seem to thrive, progress. They grow because people can go to school, get to jobs. People who seem disabled can work, fulfilling their true potential. I find it funny in this country, Americans love their automobiles. And they look down on public transit. Now, despite that, Mr. Bell had mentioned that ridership is increasing, whether it's environmental, whether it's economical, whatever. Reducing the service now or increasing the fares is going to throw away a wonderful opportunity. Please do not waste this opportunity. Thank you.
Thank you. Welcome.
Good evening, Senator Dibble and members of the committee. My name is Sarah Subcheck, and I am very impressed that you said my name correctly. No one ever does that. I currently live in Minneapolis, but I grew up in Cottage Grove, and my personal experience with transit started when I was living with my parents in Cottage Grove, and I took a job with United Way in downtown St. Paul. So I took bus 361 every day in and out. I did not have a car, so I depended on the bus, and at the time, I basically took it for granted that the bus was even there. But if it hadn't been, I wouldn't have been able to work. Currently, public transit is still my major source of transportation to school, work, and home. But I want to talk to you today a little bit about something a little different. I want to talk to you about my job as an employment developer, which has really given me a chance to paint this picture with the immediate and desperate consequences that a lot of people are dealing with. And this picture is one in which transit is directly related to the health, to the education, and to the economy of our community. In 1 year, I assisted in securing employment for almost 100 clients. Of these, one-third of them were unable to take their jobs because they did not have a car or because public transit did not go to where their employment was located. Even when public transit has been available, it's not always at the appropriate times. One St. Paul woman, for example, was interested in a housekeeper job at a hotel, and it required her to work on the weekends. But the earliest bus available on Saturday had her arriving 30 minutes late for her shift, and the hotel could not adjust her schedule, so she was out of a job. In this job, I work with adult students at the Hub Center, and there are about 1,000 students per day. Most of them do not own cars. These are mothers and fathers. They are working or seeking employment, and they cannot afford to see their bus services cut or fare prices increase. For example, Muhammad works at Ramada Inn, earning $10.11 per hour. After paying all of his bills, he's left with just over $90 a month for food and fees. He told me that if it was a 50-cent increase, he would not be able to go to school any longer. So, Mr. Chair and members of the committee, please find funds to keep all buses on the road and avoid a fare hike. Thank you.
Thank you. Steve Jacobson approaching the podium, and after Steve Jacobson, we'll have Warren Jacobson, and then Larry Johnson, and then John Wilson. Welcome.
Thank you, Senator Dibble, and everyone. I'm Steve Jacobson. I'm the Vice President of the National Federation of the Blind of Minnesota, and since our president spoke so eloquently on why we need transportation as blind persons, I'd like to take a quick whack at it from another angle. When our forefathers talked about the pursuit of happiness, they likely did not think of it as pursuing it in an automobile. In the early 1950s, if you listen to old radio dramas and TV shows, transportation, such as buses and trains, are part of everyone's lives. People owned cars, but when I was a kid, Grandma often came to visit on the train. When I was a child, my mother, who was a sighted middle-class mother, took us shopping for school clothes on the bus. Things have changed since then, and we're not going to go back to those times. There's lots of things about the 50s that are good to leave behind. However, some of what's changed has been a decision made by society to spend money on cars, and some of what's changed has been government deciding to spend money to support cars. There's no problem in doing that. I don't object to that at all. However, it leaves all of us who do not have driver's licenses, including those of us who are blind, at a disadvantage. It's further to go to work. Jobs change more often. You can't just buy a house near your employer and think you might not have to repurchase in a couple of years. Therefore, I think it is fair for those of us who use mass transit and society in general, including the government, of course, to share the cost that this has placed on those of us who are not drivers. It is fair for taxi drivers to have a driver's license. It isn't fair, though, that a math teacher might have to have one to get to the school where the job is. It is not fair for the government to spend money stimulating new jobs and at the same time make it harder for a segment of the population to get there. What I hear tonight is that nobody wants to do that. But let's try to get the others who are sitting on the fence on mass transit to see it the same way. Thank you.
you. We have Warren Johnson, or excuse me, Jacobson, Larry Johnson, John Wilson, then Tom Tibbockhorst. Thank you.
Mr. Commissioner, lawmakers, thank you for this opportunity to testify today. My name is Warren Jacobson. I live in St. Paul. I depend on transit. I, for a variety of reasons, I do not own a car. The end is of a week ago, last Wednesday, I'm unemployed. So in this week, this last week, I've taken a transit to a job interview. I've used transit to get to the Minnesota Workforce Center for a workshop, and I took transit to get to this hearing here today. I am very proud to live in this town and in this state, and primarily because I get the sense that we do a lot of things right here, you know, compared to other areas of the country. I have done some traveling to other parts of the country and to other parts of the world, and I get the sense that we are way behind when it comes to transit. And I think what a lot of other towns and other cities and other countries have learned that we haven't learned as well yet is that transit helps drive economic growth and it improves overall quality of life. So simply, I'm here to ask that we please appropriate the funds to sustain current transit service levels without raising fares. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thank you. Larry Johnson, Golden Valley. I've been walking and riding the bus for a long, long time. I was on the Advisory Committee on Transit in the early 70s. I remember when the adult fare was 50 cents, and I have no idea how much lower it was when I was riding the bus as a 7 or 8 year old. The main work that I do is I do storytelling programs in schools and other places with an environmental theme. So for many years, one way or another, I've been teaching children and young people to do strange things like walk or take public transit or grow gardens and things of that sort. And most of the time I take the bus to where I'm going to do that and haul all my stuff that I need. But like tomorrow, I've got to do a workshop in Shakopee, got to be there at 7:30 in the morning, and we are able to have a car. My wife and I share a hybrid Prius, and she claims I have a black belt in public transportation, but tomorrow I'll take the car, and she will take the bus to some work that she has to do at the University of Minnesota. Because that kind of work hasn't made me financially independent yet, like some of the people that have gotten us into some of this mess, at least on a national level, I work 12 hours a week running a drop-in center for mentally ill adults, people struggling with mental illness at Plymouth Church. And these folks are professional bus riders. They have no choice but to ride the bus. And of course, as we've heard many times, they're not going to be able to absorb a bus fare increase. And it's weird to me. Part of the thing that I understand is that fewer people buying new cars, that decreases some of the funding for transit. I mean, it's not the only thing. They're driving older cars, keeping the roads congested. The Chamber of Commerce is working on let's get more people off the out of cars into buses, and so maybe we could think totally outside the box and hire people that are professional bus riders on limited incomes to teach business people how to ride the bus, or who knows what else you might come up with. But please do it. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Johnson. So we have John Wilson, then Tom Tibbockhorst. Dave Peterson after him, and Jeff Narrowbrook after that. Okay. Welcome.
My name is John Wilson. I live in St. Louis Park, and I represent only myself and speak only for myself. I came here tonight to ask you to fully fund the Metro Transit and the Suburban Transit Agency so that they will not have to cut services or raise fares. I have no suggestions as to where you might find that money, but I just ask you to find some and give it to them. As a comment, I've lived in St. Louis Park about 20 years, and transit levels are actually, the bus levels are poorer now than they were 20 years ago. Metro Transit has this plan as which they plan to double transit in a certain number of years. It seems to be flexible, but they've taken no steps to implement those. And I'd like to close by giving an opinion. I have no confidence in the Metropolitan Council to properly run the bus system. And I don't think that Metro Transit should be within an agency that is controlled by the whims and idiosyncrasies and ideology of a single politician. That's it.
So as Tom DeBockhorst, thank you, approaches, we have Dave Peterson after him, Jeff Narrowbrook, then Kristen Perrin.
Senator Dibble, my name is Tom DeBockhorst, and I live in South Minneapolis in the Uptown area, and I am a member of the National Federation of Line, and I definitely can testify to relying on the bus. I work over in Little Canada, Minnesota, and I take the bus every day to and from work. I take three buses, and if it were not for the bus system, I could not get to my job or get back home or do any other stuff that I rely on, and also blame people in a whole couldn't do the things that we rely on to do to be independent as we are, like anybody else. And you know, going to the store, going to the meetings, going to doctors, going to and from work, going to school. And I think that transit should not be cut, and you know, and plus some people can't, people being on sometimes fixed incomes can't afford, you know, the fare, so the fare shouldn't be increased. And also another thing is our training center, Blind Incorporated, students rely on the bus for training, and that for another reason why the transit should not be cut. And I strongly urge you to keep the funding the way it is and not to increase the fare. Thank you.
Thanks so much. We have Dave Peterson, then Jeff Narrowbrook, Kristen Perrin, and then Michael Germain. Welcome.
Good evening. I'm Dave Peterson. I live in the Carrick neighborhood of Minneapolis, and I am a public transit user. And it's not because I don't have a choice. I do have a choice. When I moved here, I brought my car with me. Even at that time, I chose to use public transportation every opportunity I had. When I stopped working in the suburbs, I donated my car to charity, and I have never looked back. I'm a public transit user because the automobile is unsustainable on so many levels. I suggest to you that the current economic catastrophe our country is facing is largely the function of hanging on to a transportation system we can't possibly afford. Public transit is often looked at as a charity. I would suggest to you that if the real costs of using automobiles was made apparent to the traveling public, public transportation would be widely used, and our country and our state and our city would be in much better shape. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Welcome.
Hi, good evening. Thank you for asking us here. I'm here with Transit for Livable Communities, and I want to speak kind of my angle on transit. I'm somebody who is privileged in society and you know, I have choices. And so I want to emphasize that I think the primary point here is fairness and access. But I want to say I think that's the minimum that we should have in our society. I also want to talk about going beyond the minimum and just being smart in our leadership. You know, my wife and I are both from out of state. We have family in other places we could be. We've chosen to be here, and the transit system is no small part in that, and the promise of more to come. So I just really want to emphasize that for keeping young people here, young professionals, people, you know, coming to Minnesota and staying here, I think this is a big part of that piece. You look at what's going on out west, in Denver and a lot of cities, they're really ahead of us. So, you know, when it comes time for us to start having children, you know, we want to be in a place that provides a sustainable way of life. So I really hope that we'll continue on our path and see that leadership so that we can keep people coming here and staying here. But I think fairness is the first step.
Great. Thank you. See, Kristen Perrin, then Michael Germain. After that, we have Terrence Gowdy. Oh, thank you. Hi.
Hi, I'm Kristen Perrin, and thank you for saying my name correctly as well. I'm here with two hats, actually, as a transit rider and as an employee at the Downtown Minneapolis Transportation Management Organization. As a transit rider, I live in St. Louis Park, and I literally could walk out of my house and be at a bus stop, and it was great. I could get to Minneapolis in not very much time. It was great. Now I have to walk three blocks, and I'm not complaining about that, but I fear that if cuts keep happening, cuts in services keep happening, then I'm going to have to go further, and it'll be inconvenient, be forced to drive more. And then as from the Downtown Minneapolis TMO, I'd just like to say that we hear time and time again that people will drive if transit isn't cost efficient and convenient for them. And so please, please keep that in mind. Thanks a lot.
So we have Michael Germain. Saw him earlier.
I think he's gone.
I think he departed. It's too bad. He's from Apple Valley, where I graduated from high school. Oh, well. So we already heard from Terrence. There's a name here I can't read. It starts with
Josh,
K.
Richard Johnson, we probably already went.
Oh, nope. We jumped over you guys. Looks like a K and an M.
That would be me, I think.
All right. Okay, come.
Okay.
Well, we'll take you.
You're right.
And after Kurt is Roger Hart. Oh, there he is. Oh, I didn't see you hiding back there. Kathy Haskins and Faith Cable.
Good evening, Chairman Dibble and members of the committee. Thank you for being here with us. My name is Kirk Matson. I've lived in South Minneapolis most of my life. I have friends here tonight from Isaiah and from Transit for Livable Communities. I'm mainly here as somebody who has ridden the bus just about every day for 40 years. 20 of those years, give or take. I've also had the opportunity to work with people with many different kinds of disabilities, blindness, epilepsy, mental retardation, mental illness, and I have seen how the bus system has allowed them to become apartment renters, homeowners, taxpayers, wage earners, theater goers, Metrodome goers. They've really benefited in terms of quality of life because their sole source of transportation was, at least to a degree, reliable. On the other hand, I can certainly identify with the gentleman who was talking about people who have, people in his family who have had to make decisions about education, about jobs, about housing, based on the level of service or lack thereof for choices that they wanted to make. I believe that that we've already made a commitment in the last few years to develop a legitimate and expanded transit system in this city and in the metropolitan area. And everybody said tonight is an excellent reason for continuing that. I think that you gentlemen probably know better than anybody here that funds are easy to cut and hard to replace. And since we have already put so much money into light rail, into park and ride, into bike and ride, into expanding commuter bus service and other services in the last few years, it is counterproductive and just plain lacking in common sense to cut or reduce the flow of finances to these programs. If we are serious about not only developing mass transit for the needs, but also making it attractive to people who simply want to be commuters or college students or, you know, people who don't live on unlimited incomes, people who don't have disabilities. If we want to make this attractive to people throughout the metropolitan area, this is absolute, cutting funding is the absolute wrong thing to do. And cutting service is what happens every time we have a shortfall in the last 40 years that I've been riding a bus. And just in terms of personal feeling, I'm tired of being the poor relation when it comes to transit in the metropolitan area, and I think everybody else here is too. And I want to thank you for all you've done to keep mass transit thriving. Appreciate you having our backs.
Great. Thank you. Roger. And then Kathy Haskins, Faith Cable, and Kate Kane.
I guess I'd like to thank Scott Dibble and Frank Hornstein and Senator Carlson for having this. It permitted me to, when I went to the bus, I said, oh, there's the meeting tonight that we're supposed to talk. And so I came back to the bus and was able to give an opinion. You know, everyone's talking out of a sense of fear here.
Oh, sorry about that.
And a fear that something is going to be taken away. And it seems to me that our society has to come around to the fact that we care what happens to others and we're willing to share the burden. Now, I believe that, you know, I would be willing to pay more taxes. And I guess I've read Jared Diamond's book, The Collapse, and he was asked whether U.S. is going to collapse under the current system. And he said, it really depends upon the elite and whether the elite is willing to sacrifice and suffer a little so that the rest of the people will be able to do well. Now, and it seems to me that the people who have made lots of money in this system, and they couldn't do it in other countries, it's only fair to ask them to pay their fair share. And so I think that we should be increasing the income tax so that the people who are able to afford it can make this a good system. Now, the other thing is that 2 years ago I went to Denmark and we had an island called Eru that we were going to. And so we stopped at a subway station. At the subway station, the person gave us a subway pass, he gave us a bus card, and then he gave us another ferry card, and then we caught a bus on Eru, which then took us to the farm where we were vacating. And there was 10 minutes in between each of these modes of transportation, and it got you way out into the country, and it was just wonderful. And I think that we do care and share for each other, and our safety network is a fact that we do care for each other. And I think that we need to really push the fact that this is something that we all need, all want, and it's something that makes us a better people, a better society, And I think it's really important to get mass transit. Now, I would like to see subways, and I'd like to see monorails, because then those don't interfere with the surface traffic. And so I think we should be thinking not just solutions such as light rail, which is really good, but ways that will make the transportation really work well for us. Thank you.
Thank you, Roger. So we have Kathy Haskins, Faith Cable, Kate Kane, Sarah Mullins, Alex Tittle, Kathleen Murphy. Welcome.
Hello, my name is Kathy Haskins, and I live in South Minneapolis. I'm here today because I use the public transit a lot, and I live just four blocks from the light rail, and that's my mode of transit to work. I do not own a car, and I have not owned one since 1988. I'm so poor that it would be a hardship on me to own a vehicle, and I also have a mental disability, which makes me very tired in the morning, so that if I was to drive early in the morning, it would be hard for me. I never know when I'm tired and when I'm not, so I just don't own a vehicle. In the summertime, I bicycle around the neighborhood as well as bus it, and in the winter, I walk and carpool and ride buses. Less transit service would mean longer waits between connections. Unless you use the bus and light rail regularly as I do, you do not really know how awful it can be to have a 10-minute or more wait in freezing cold, even in bundled well in a parka and long johns. From my psychiatric appointment, the number two used to be a 20-minute wait, and in between the six and the two, and that would get very, very long, and my psychiatrist has agreed to kind of arrange my appointments so that I wouldn't have to be out in the cold in the dead of winter. Good public transit is a necessity in a large metro area, not only for poor people like me who cannot afford a vehicle, but also in order to reduce congestion in the streets. The better public transportation is, the more people will use it. Bus use to the state fair is an example of this increased usage. And the more people that ride buses and light rails, the better air quality will be in our metro service. I'm very heartened by how many people don't want to have increased fares, because it would be a hardship on me to have an increase in, okay. I was thinking perhaps you could use increase in tax gas and oil for helping us have quality transit. This is just one idea of where you could get some more funding source. Thanks.
Thank you. Faith Cable.
Hi, I'm Faith Cable, and I am here as a person who rides transit. I am a choice transit rider, riding sometimes on the number 5 bus. It helps me get some reading done, catch up on some work. But I only take transit when it's convenient. And I don't take transit when I have a meeting in the suburbs in the morning, because it would take me too long to get there, and then I couldn't make it back to work for my next meeting. So I only take the bus maybe about half the time or so. And you know, the flexibility that I have peak 15-minute service, which isn't bad, but that is hugely important to me. And without that, I mean, if it would go down to 30 minutes, I don't know if it would really be worth it. And you know, I can't go to a store and buy better transit service. Instead, I come here and I ask you. So, not only that, but the, you know, the cost is another issue. The $225 just for a single way rush hour trip, $450 round trip. I mean, it's expensive compared to cheap gas and short trips, which is why my mom finds it not very cost effective to take it. And looking around the rest of the country, I mean, in New York City, $2 buys you, you know, access to one of the largest transit systems in the country. And we're charging more than that, and what kind of access are we providing in comparison? So not only that, but looking around at other cities like Denver, Portland, Salt Lake City, Charlotte, you know, they are expanding light rail systems so quickly, far faster than we're doing at, you know, one line every decade. So, you know, I have friends I've talked to who have never ridden a bus before. They would happily ride Central Corridor if it was open, but it's not, so then we just talk about it, and then we don't go to Minneapolis when we're in St. Paul. And, you know, if there is actually going to be transportation choices beyond just buses to limited places, but to actually more of the region and at more times that is flexible enough for people to be able to take it, you know, we need the vision and the leadership, and it's got to come from you. Thanks.
Thank you. So, Kate Kane, Sarah Mullins, Alex Tittle, and Kathleen Murphy.
Hello, my name is Kathleen Murphy, and I live out in Richfield. And I just want to say to Senator Dibble and the community, thank you for taking the time to come here tonight and to listen to everybody's viewpoint. And what I really want to say on behalf of Transit for Liberal Communities, which I've been a volunteer with for over 5 years now, is that our goal is to reach a goal that we all can succeed in, which is the best transit that we can have here in Minnesota. And I'm listening tonight to everybody who's speaking with the needs of what concerns them in their lives, and that concerns all of us as well, because what is important here is for Metro Transit to listen outside of the box and to say, hey, isn't it about time that we give people in our society, in our communities, what they need and give them something that's worthwhile for them so that they can get to their jobs and where they need to go? And are we going to keep coming back year after year after year and say, hey, Mr. Bell, don't do that? And I think that it's time that we look at the whole broad picture and really look at it with the viewpoint of we need this transportation system, and we need a good one now. Thank you.
Thank you. So we have Kate Kane, Sarah Mullins, and Alex. We have Sarah.
Okay. Hi. Thank you, Senator Dibble, Representative Hornstein, Senator Carlson, for convening this hearing today. As partners with you on this long journey for transit funding over the last 5 years, I know that Isaiah echoes and affirms all of the comments that have been made today about how this is a justice issue, how everybody needs to be able to get around, and it's been beautifully described. It's been so beautifully described that it starts to really feel like a broken record. You think, how many people have to tell their story? I know that you guys have been listening to these stories for years, and so you know them really well. So the thing I was thinking was how do you and your colleagues listen to the message anew with a fresh ear? And, you know, I work at 3M, and in this economy, our mantra is, how can we come out of 2009 stronger than we are today? So it's a very positive way of looking at a challenge and really taking it on and saying this is a time to really invest in ourselves and making ourselves stronger. And I think the people here today ask the same question. How does my family, my community, my state come out of 2009 stronger, more supported, and more capable of building and being a thriving metro area? So I know not all of your colleagues were able to be here tonight, and there was the video, and I hope you can convince them to watch it, but when you go back to the Capitol, I think the question maybe you need to ask them is, what do you want from your constituents this year? Because it takes people, and all of us, to make the economy work. And the question for your colleagues is, don't you want each of your residents, each of your constituents, to be able to contribute every day according to their gifts and talents to making that happen so that Minnesota comes out of 2009 stronger? You know, as you've heard, jobs and transportation are inextricably linked. You just can't separate them. And everybody is worried about jobs this year, so everybody needs to be worried about transportation. You know, at the lunch table, I hear my colleagues talking about how are they going to get their kids around, they can't afford an extra car. It's the same thing over and over again. So this time calls for courage and to believe in ourselves and to believe that we actually have a hopeful future. And I do believe we can solve this shortfall. We can do it for good, but we can only do it through collective action. I would support an appropriation to fill the Metro Transit gap. I'd also support a quarter cent Metro sales tax, which would do it for the good long term. And I just want to remind you that we've seen courageous action before. We want to see it again. The Metro Transit funding shortfall was actually part of the 2005 final budget negotiations with the governor. And just over a year ago, you and many of your colleagues, a supermajority of the legislature, overrode Governor Pawlenty's veto of the transportation bill, which included funding for transit. Not enough funding, but a good step forward. So we need you and your colleagues to see these moments not as the exception, but actually as the new norm of the courage that everybody is willing to put forth to make it really happen for ourselves and for everybody in the state. So thank you.
Alex?
Senator Dibble, Representative Hornstein, subcommittee members. My name is Alex Tittle. I work with Summit Academy OIC, and we're in the business of job training. Recently, Representative Hornstein saw the limits and the enthusiasm in which the community that I represent in North Minneapolis and the metro area overall is willing to go to try and make sure that job opportunities are prevalent for communities of color as well as women. Okay, employers expect employees to be on time to work. That's what I'm hearing every day from employers as I'm trying to get folks jobs in the construction industry as well as the healthcare industry. If the transit system is impaired in this manner, we're going to be finding ourselves in a position where we're unable to get folks to jobs on time. Not to mention to school. Over 70% of my students, out of a student population of 200 right now, over 70% of my students utilize transit system. I have a young man in my program. He's a single parent father with two teenage daughters, struggling. They live in Little Canada, transitional housing. They take a number of buses. I think I heard a gentleman talk about three buses from Little Canada. Now just add on a couple young ladies going to school that you have to see off. This is a challenge for not just him, but a number of our constituents and clients that we serve at Summit Academy. I highly want you to understand that we at Summit, we provide some assistance to our men and women who attend our program to pay for passes to get to and from school. If these taxes occur or the increase in rates occur, we won't be able to give out as many bus passes. That lowers our numbers. You lower the numbers of students in our schools, where are they? It's a chain reaction, folks. We're talking folks who are on the street. Next thing you know, they're on the news. I'm here to fight that. I know that the gentleman sitting here are here to fight that. And I know that you have our best interests at heart. We're not looking for a handout, but we're looking for a hand up. An opportunity to get out there and do what's right. And do what's right is finding a job. Not looking for social services that give us a hand, free money or free opportunity, but we're looking for a job. As we always say, the best social service program in the world is a job. Thank you.
Thank you.
That concludes the names we have on the list, but I do want to see if there's others that want to testify. You're certainly welcome. I see one gentleman. Is there anyone else that...
Two.
Okay. Three? Okay. We'll take the three of you, and then we'll call the hearing to a close. So those of you whose names we don't have, please state your name and if you have any organizational affiliation. Welcome to our committee.
Hi, how you guys doing? My name is Anthony Cox, and I'm with the Voices of Change Committee, and I've heard about this because I got a flyer from that meeting. And there's a lot of, you know, talk about, you know, buses and stuff, you know, getting people to where they got to go. But I would like to, not out of disrespect for anybody here, but who in the hell is in charge of this raising this bus fare thing? You guys know? Well, yeah, because it's insane, man, because there are people, even senior citizens, huh?
It's a proposal from the Metropolitan Council.
Oh, okay, but whoever it is, I never met the person who's behind it, but are they scared or something to come here and speak themselves? Because it's completely insane to be raising this bus fare up so damn high. And, you know, because I remember there are a lot of people out there who, even senior citizens, were talk about they remember when bus fare was like, well, 25 cents or 35 cents, and now it's up to damn near rent money and so forth. And it's like, you know, what's going on? Don't they care? Because there are a lot of people out there, even me myself, I've been homeless, and I know what it feels like, because there are people out there talking about we want to try to, you know, get transportation and stuff, and we want to make sure we get a job, a good high-paying job where people communicate, and also get into a home, a well, nicely clean home where it's, you know, warm in the wintertime, because a lot of these homes up for sale, it's insane too, and a lot of people out there, even mentally ill people, who are trying to get themselves together and get themselves a home, but it's like it's one big joke to whoever's doing this. You know, raising the bus fare and stuff, making it hard for people to get ahead, and it's like, you know, all this talk about, you know, different politicians and stuff who want to help get people off the street, but nothing gets done. It's like the same old bull duty year after year after year. You know, we want to help people and get them off the street, get them bus fare. But if anything, like give people bus cards or something for free instead of paying for them. Because, you know, sometimes it's people going up there and it's like $20 for a bus card, $40, and, you know, more than that. You know what I'm saying? And it's like when you're waiting for the bus, it takes the bus a long time, especially in the wintertime, which in a way I can understand because I wouldn't want to be driving on the bus and it's, and the bus driver has to go, you know, super speed, you know, even in the wintertime, a snowstorm. But that and gas prices and, you know, so forth like that. You know, I just want to know what they're trying to say. They don't give a rat's ass about the public? You know what I'm saying? So what's the deal, and when is it all going to stop with this raising of the bus fare, you know?
Well, I will respond. If in fact, the Met Council decides to move ahead with, and let me just say, Peter Bell was here from the Met Council, and Annette Witsack was here earlier as well from the Met Council, so they were here. But if they do decide to press ahead with this additional 50 cents, you can be sure that the legislature will call hearings again like we did last time, and we will oppose that. We'll try to fight that. Let's see, we have a gentleman here raise his hand, and this woman back here. Come forward. Thank you.
I'm Andrew Carker, and I've been riding the bus for the last 4 years. Before that, I rode like 34 years ago. And I want to thank all of you for such a wonderful service. It's phenomenal. I'm so impressed by the buses. They are on schedule. The bus drivers are so courteous. It's just a wonderful, wonderful system, and I'd like to thank everyone who's made that happen. Secondly, I don't know if you've thought of other modes of transportation for shorter distances besides buses, like human-powered, like in Manhattan, they have these human taxis, you know, like bike people with little plastic enclosures. So for short distances, if you've thought of that, or buggies, you know, horse-drawn carriages, if you've done some experimenting to think out of the box, different besides buses and trains. Thank you.
Thank you.
I think there was one individual on the last testifier of the night.
All right.
Okay.
We'll bring the mic to you.
This is David Girash, and I take the bus and also Metro Billy all over the place, and I am disabled, and it's a hardship sometimes to get around, because sometimes the the buses don't go to the suburbs. They need to have buses go to the suburbs. And also, they need to have those sidewalks shoveled a little better than that, you know. Well, not the sidewalks, but the entryways where so motor scooters and stuff can get to the bus, you know, and that. They did it like over on the north side of the Nicollet Garage. That's really bad there. They don't shovel very well at all. And I take the bus all over. I take it to the YWCA. I go there about two or three times a week. And I take it to my job at Cava and 59th Nicollet. And I take it to Opportunity Partners and that. And a fare increase or more cuts in the bus service would really make it hard for me. It would. Yeah,
thank you.
I saw one more gentleman seem to be making a beeline to the podium. So we'll take you, sir, and then we'll close the hearing.
All right. Well, thank you for finding time for me, Senator Dibble, Senator Carlson, Representative Hornstein. I wasn't going to say anything, but I felt moved after all to come up here and make an embarrassing admission to all of you to get it off my chest. My name is Tim Harlan Marks. I'm here tonight with Transit for Livable Communities. And despite the fact that I'm completing a volunteer internship with a transit advocacy organization, I am embarrassed to admit that I am an infrequent to very infrequent transit user. I would say that I use transit for about probably less than 25% of my transportation needs. That's frankly because it's very difficult for me to get where I'm going. I live in Loring Park in Minneapolis. I have an internship in St. Paul. I also have a part-time job in Columbia Heights and a part-time job in Eden Prairie. It's very difficult for me to get where I'm going, so I want to be very brief, just get up here and say that I would really like to urge the legislature to find a funding solution to our transit deficit that doesn't further postpone a much-needed improvement for people like me who would very much like to take transit for all the wonderful reasons that people have articulated, for the community, for the convenience, to reduce a carbon footprint. So that's all. Thanks so much for your time tonight.
Thank you.
And
before we have one more, or no? Okay. Before we close, I wanted to take this opportunity to thank my colleague, Senator Dibble, and his office for doing such a great job organizing tonight. Michael Schmagen, his staff member. And,
Tommy Sheridan.
Excuse me?
Tommy Sheridan,
who's here as well. And also Senator Carlson for trekking up here from Eagan. So we really appreciate all of your advocacy in the past, and it's you that make a difference. As Frederick Douglass said, power concedes nothing without a demand, and it's you are continuing to go to the Capitol and to your elected officials and demanding better transit that makes a difference. And so this will be an important couple of months here. So thank you again. And I know Senator Dibble, if you wanted to close things out here.
Just echo the thanks to Tommy Sheridan, Michael Schmagen, Michelle Dibley, Dave Van Hattem, all the folks from Transit for Livable Communities, Dave Green and Sarah Mullins from Isaiah and others, as well as, again, Katie Hatt from Peter McLaughlin's office, and everyone who worked so hard to make this evening possible. Join us tomorrow night in Maplewood City Hall, but also keep track of what we're doing over the legislature. Keep the emails, phone calls, visits coming. If you can make it over for the hearings during the day, when we consider these issues, when the rubber really hits the road, please come be with us and press us and pressure us and share your vision and share your passion. Thank you very much.
Thank you.